Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The NBA Eastern Conference Finals. Let me hit you up with a series of numbers. 18, 17, 19. 18, 17, 19. No, those are not my high school locker combinations or the numbers for my combination. They're the points that the Cleveland Cavaliers scored in the first, the second, and the fourth quarter of yesterday's game one in Boston. Here's another number for you. 25. That's how much they lost that series opener by. 25, and it felt like 50. Now, instead of giving you my assessment, why don't I just turn it over to Tristan Thompson? He had some comments for ESPN. For a quick moment, TT, my man, what happened yesterday? Quote, they punked us early and often, end quote. Fact is, truer words have never been spoken. Boston did punk Cleveland early and often and repeatedly and in about a dozen different ways. Now, I would never want to read too much into a first basket of a game or a series, but Jaylen Brown collecting the opening tip and then beating two Cavs to the bucket was not a good omen for the Cavaliers.
Al Horford wins the tap towards Jaylen Brown. He's going to immediately attack the basket, go to the left hand, and lay it in before anybody can get settled in.
That's pretty embarrassing. And you had to know when that game started like that, bad things were going to happen. Then there was Jaylen Brown to Al Horford.
Jaylen Brown attacks Korver, gets in the paint, floats it up for Horford. He puts it off the window and in, and the Celtics have scored 11 straight points to lead by 8.
Thanks to Celtics Radio for that one. Then you had Jaylen Brown going coast to coast.
Jaylen Brown attacks Hill, puts it off the glass and in.
Man, you're talking about building smacker, building the wake. Somebody give me a sandwich.
Timeout, Ty Lue, as the Celtics have...
Can I tell you something? That was all in the first quarter. That was all in the first quarter, a first quarter where Boston took a 21-point lead and ended the game before the end of that first quarter. So credit to the Celtics. Credit for being ready to play. But the Cavaliers did not even bother getting off the bus. They look nothing like the team that smoked Toronto around earlier. They look like a team that looked at the Celtics and they saw that there was no Kyrie. There was no Gordon Hayward. They remembered that LeBron was playing some of the best basketball of his career, and then the Cavaliers just collectively decided, no problem. But it was a real problem because the Celtics pretty much erased LeBron. None of his supporting cast did anything. None of them guarded anyone, and they ended up getting curb stomped. Going into yesterday, there were all these people making a lot of noise about how it was going to be a short series. And it might still be a short series, just not the one that everybody thought. Because the buzz was the Cleveland had been so impressive against Toronto and that Boston was finally going to run out of all that magic. Because Boston's 108-83 win made one thing very clear. These Celtics are not the Raptors. These Celtics are for real. They dealt with the Greek Freak. They dealt with Joe and Ben. And in game one, they dealt with LeBron. Here are two other numbers, 15 and 7. Those are LeBron's points and LeBron's turnovers, respectively. The thinking had been that the Celtics would simply focus on Kevin Love, Kyle Korver, and J.R. Smith. Then let LeBron get or do what he wants, but shut everybody else down. Shut down the Cavaliers shooters. Instead, Boston just shut down everybody, including LeBron. So yes, the Celtics are young. And yes, they are inexperienced, but they've got crazy length. They've got incredible closeout ability. They act like they've been there before, even when they haven't. And most of all, they're obviously not intimidated by LeBron. Not only are they not afraid of LeBron, they want LeBron. Especially Marcus Morris, who was hyping himself up before that series, is one of the league's best LeBron stoppers. Then this guy goes out and he proves it. Sure, LeBron had been utterly transcendent in the first two rounds. I mean, it's no exaggeration to say this guy's played some of the best playoff basketball that we have ever seen. But it's no exaggeration to also say that yesterday was one of the worst playoff games he's ever played. 15 points, 9 assists, 7 rebounds, 7 turnovers, and a plus minus of minus 32. Now, I'm not saying that this is about LeBron losing, because it was about Boston winning and about Boston dominating at both ends. It was about Boston finding matchups that they would win and then killing Cleveland with them. No names mentioned, Kevin Love. Now, you know LeBron had a bad game. You know this guy had a bad game when his lone highlight from that game came after the game when he was asked about what happened at the start of the fourth quarter.
What happened? We ran him the first possession. We ran him down all the way to 2 on the shot clock. Marcus Morris missed a jump shot, followed it up. They got a dunk. We came back down. We ran a set for Jordan Clarkson, and he came off and missed it. They rebounded it. And we came back on the defensive end, and we got a stop. They took it out on the sideline. Jason Tatum took the ball out, threw it to Marcus Smart in the short corner. He made a 3. We come back down, missed another shot. And then Tatum came down and went 94 feet, did a Euro step, and made a right-hand layup timeout. There you go.
Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive, but not at all surprising. Not when we know about LeBron's mental approach. Not when we know LeBron's insane basketball IQ. Except, again, that was the highlight of his night. Speaking of great basketball IQs, Brad Stevens, what did you think of that 25-point Game 1 beatdown and win over the greatest player of his generation?
We've got a lot of room to improve from tonight.
Celtics, they're absolutely relentless. And they will be the first ones to tell you that all they did was win one game. In their minds, it's not that special, not that significant. Yes, they completely shut down the Cavaliers, but they expected to completely shut down the Cavaliers. You might have thought that Cleveland was favored in this series, and in fact, they probably were, but Boston didn't see it that way. All they did was hold home court for a game. Brad Stevens and LeBron will both tell you that. They'll also tell you the series is not over after only one game. Everybody in the series knows that a 25-point loss counts as much as a 1-point loss. But, bottom line, for all of you who did not believe in the Celtics before, you better believe right now. Because even without 3 key guys, they are for real, and they just punk Cleveland early and often, all game long, and they can do it again, and they probably will.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, cornbread.
Somebody give me a sandwich.
I could use a sando too. Ham and Swiss, please. I'll take a little mayo. Eldrick is not totally back yet. Pierre McGuire. Pierre, my friend, good morning. It is so good to have you back. How are you?
Oh, fantastic, Jim. Really nice to chat with you.
Always good to talk to you, Pierre. I look forward to it. Winnipeg goes into Nashville. They dominate the Preds in Game 7. Then, Pierre, Thursday night, they turn around. They beat Vegas on Saturday. So how impressed were you with the way that they went into Nashville, took care of their business then, and then showed up the way they did only 48 hours later?
Jim, they were so surgical in Game 7. I had the privilege of doing that game with Eddie Olczyk and Kenny Albert, and you could definitely tell that there was a domination factor from Winnipeg that clearly got into the heads of Nashville, and they took the crowd right out of it. Yeah, Pekka wasn't particularly good in goal for Nashville, but you could see the four-line balance, you could see the depth of their defense, and you could see that they had a lot of confidence in their goalie, Connor Hellebuck. The way they turned it around 48 hours later, that is such a magnificent point, Jim, and the reason why is, usually after a massive Game 7, there's an emotional letdown in hockey, a big letdown. There was no letdown, and I believe part of that, Jim, is what this team means to the city and what the fans mean to the team. This is as intimidating as any building in professional hockey right now when you come into Winnipeg, and the fans are so appropriate and they're so loud. And it really is intimidating.
We're talking to Pierre McGuire. So many good points in that, Pierre, that I want to unpack. And the Winnipeg story to me is just absolutely amazing. I mean, they score 65 seconds into the game. They had 3 goals in the first period. They had Vegas chasing all night long. So to you, was that just a matter of some rust for Vegas? And do you expect them to shake that? Or is it bigger than that?
No, I thought it was more about Vegas figuring out that we're in the Western Conference Final and these guys are playing for keeps. So there was an adjustment period for them. It was a little bit different than their series with Los Angeles, a little bit different than their series with San Jose. They were starting on the road. They were playing against a very aggressive opponent, and they were up against it because of the fans. They figured it out the last 40 minutes, I thought. They were a lot better. They weren't good enough because they fell behind, but they were a lot better. I expect this series is still going to get better for them as it goes along, but this is a very difficult place to play, Jim.
There are a million things demanding your time. Contact lenses should not be one of them. With Simple Contacts, you can renew your prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. No more doctor's offices or waiting rooms. You take a five-minute vision test from your phone or computer. It is reviewed by a licensed doctor, and you receive a renewed prescription and reorder of your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Do you have an unexpired prescription? Just upload a photo or your doctor's information and order your lenses. Instead of heading to the doctor every single year to renew your prescription, take a few minutes out of your day to do it on your own time and your own terms. Please note, this is not a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is vision care for the 21st century. The vision test is only $20. The contact lens prices are unbeatable, and standard shipping is free. Best of all, we're offering a promotion for our listeners. Get $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome, or enter Rome at the checkout. That's $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/Rome, or enter code Rome at checkout. Pierre McGuire joining us. That barn is fierce. And then the Jets. Pierre, they missed the playoffs last season and the year before, and then they rack up 114 points in the regular season. Now they're up 1-0 in the Western Conference Finals. How do you explain a turnaround that's that dramatic?
Because they realized last year how terrible they were defensively as a group. And one of the things they really put a point of emphasis on in training camp and even the beginning part of the year, that they were going to improve themselves in their own zone, they were going to improve themselves in the neutral zone, they were going to sacrifice personal statistics for better team statistics. So you put that all together with some really good coaching from Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy and Jamie Compan, and you've got some really good things going on. They established a starting goalie in Connor Hellebuck, who's a nominee for the Vezina Trophy, which is for the best goaltender in the league during the regular season. But, Jim, I think the biggest thing, they've got two players here that might be the best tandem in the league right now, in Mark Scheifele, a center iceman, and Blake Wheeler, a kid out of Minnesota who went to the Breck School, 3 years at the University of Minnesota, was originally a first-round pick of the Arizona Coyotes, got traded around to Boston and then to Atlanta and made the move up here. He's an American captain playing in this marketplace. And, Jim, I got to tell you, that tandem with Scheifele and Wheeler, that's as good a tandem as we've had in the NHL in a very long time.
Strong, strong praise. Pierre McGuire, my guest. Pierre, go back to Connor Hellebuck for a minute, because Paul Maurice has just been raving about him. Now, remember, Hellebuck had a tough, tough 2016-17, but Maurice feels like that in fact laid the groundwork for what he's done this year. What is the biggest difference that you see in Connor from last year to this year?
He's anchored, and he's square to the shooters, and he's a big body to begin with. But I think Wade Flaherty, the goalie coach here, has done a really good job in terms of getting him more square to the shooter, so pucks are hitting him. Last year, he looked small. He was turning sideways. He wasn't playing a robust style of goal. Now he's playing more square. He's digesting the plays a lot, I think, more efficiently, Jim, and that's really helped him a ton.
Pierre McGuire, my guest. Pierre, you mentioned this at the very top, but I want to repeat this. I mean, in Vegas and in Winnipeg, you've got two of the loudest arenas in the league. For those who have never experienced a Jets game at Bell MTS Place, how would you describe the atmosphere there?
I coached in the 1992 Stanley Cup Final, Pittsburgh versus Chicago, in Old Chicago Stadium. And everybody, and I've been in the league almost 30 years now, Jim, everybody's told me that was always the loudest building in the league, Old Chicago Stadium. I would say the noise level the other night in Winnipeg, and remember, it only holds almost 16,000 people, a little shy of that. The old stadium was almost 24,000. It's as loud. And that's, I say that with all due respect to the Chicago fan base and to that great old building in Chicago at the stadium. It's as loud as that. And the reason why I believe it, Jim, the roof is lower here. The people are on top of you, and they come ready to rock and roll. They really do, Jim. It's as loud as any building I've been in since 1992.
Pierre McGuire joins us for a few more moments. So before the season, no NHL team in Winnipeg had ever advanced beyond the second round. Pierre, I understand there's a lot of hockey left, but can you imagine what it would be like if this Jets team won the Stanley Cup?
No, I can't, because these people are just so passionate. They're so dying for a championship team. Now, they've had some success in the CFL with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, but hockey's their thing here, and it's a big thing here. And they've produced massive amounts of players that have gone on and won cups in other places, like Jonathan Toews going down to Chicago. He's from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I mean, they've developed a ton of players here that are lesser players, but they go other places to play, and they eventually win cups those places. I can't even imagine what a parade would be like down Portage in Maine, which is the two main thoroughfares here in Winnipeg. My goodness gracious, Jim, it would be must-see TV. I would tell you that right now.
It'd be insane. It really would be insane. Pierre McGuire, my guest. Before I let you go, Pierre, how about a quick thought or two about the Eastern Conference? You've got the Capitals up 2-0 on Tampa Bay. You were there when the Caps beat the Penguins in overtime in Pittsburgh in Game 6. Let me get your thoughts first. How big was that win for Washington?
It was massive, and full credit to Barry Trotz, Todd Reardon, Blaine Forsythe, Lane Lambert, the coaching staff. They implemented a brilliant Game 6 game plan because they didn't have Nicky Backstrom and they didn't have Tom Wilson, two major components on their team. I thought it was really, really well done by the coaching staff there, and the players bought in, and Alexander Ovechkin was able to exercise the demons that he couldn't beat Crosby. Well, he proved he can beat Crosby. He was a major reason why. But the thing that's allowed Washington to thrive this playoff season, two players. Evgeny Kuznetsov has elevated his game beyond belief, and Lars Eller has elevated his game beyond belief. So Eller allows him to overcome the loss of Backstrom, and the chemistry with Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, and Wilson, boy, Jim, it's been awesome to watch. And I think everybody in hockey is shocked by what's happened in this round with the 2-0 lead for Washington going down to Tampa and beating a very good Tampa team in the first two games.
So finally then, if you're John Cooper and you're Tampa Bay, Pierre, what are you thinking right now, and what kind of changes are you trying to make before Game 3?
You got to make sure you play a really solid road game. You can't fall behind in the first minute of a game like they did, you know, early on in both games in this series. But I think the biggest thing to me is they're going to have to play a structured matchup game. They're going to have to find a way to take Kuznetsov and Ovechkin and Wilson out of the game. They can't retaliate in terms of the physical play. That's not how they're built. They've got one line that's an extremely physical line with Chris Kunitz, Ryan Callahan, Cedric Paquette. Turn those guys loose physically. But the other guys have to play their slick speed skill game. They're trying to get involved in all the hitting, and it's not the way they're built to play. They have one line that can do that. The other guy's got to go out and play. But I would have a very structured game plan going into game number 3 if I were Tampa.
No better way to start a Monday than to talk some hockey, and no better person to talk it with than Pierre McGuire, an NBC hockey analyst. Pierre, so good to have you back. Have a great day, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Anytime for you, Jim. It's been a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And thanks so much for caring about hockey. It really matters when you're a voice. Thanks so much, Jim.
You know it, Pierre. You're the best. Thanks so much. Pierre McGuire. I've said it before, and I want to say it again. 2018 really is the year of the jungle. New studio, new simulcast, new affiliates, new Sirius XM clearance, new listeners. 3 decades in, you're supposed to fade out. Go quietly. Not me. Not you. Not us. Not me. Not you. Not us. 3 decades in, we're hitting this thing as hard as we ever have before. I mean, it really is amazing. Now it's time to put 2018 over the top, because today an industry press release just did drop, and I've been nominated for this year's National Radio Hall of Fame, which is an amazing honor. Now here's the kicker. Just like everything else in the jungle, we get to do this together, because in a few short weeks, the voting for the Hall of Fame will be open to you. And as badly as I really do not want to campaign, I don't want to show for votes because, frankly, I'm just not comfortable doing that. Sure, you're not, Rome. No, really, I'm not. I'm not. This is not where I live. That's not something that I'm really comfortable doing. I'm actually going to look at this thing a little bit differently. I'm going to look at this opportunity differently. I'm going to look at this as a way for all of us to accomplish something together once again, because this category is determined exclusively on listener votes. Or it's not like the Pro Bowl, where a percentage of it is based on listener votes. It's all based on listener votes. All of it. It does not go to a committee. It does not go to a panel. It goes to you, the public. So that's where I would like to see you step up and flex. That's where I need you to step up and pick me up. Listen, we all of us, we took a local San Diego show back in the day, turned it into a nationally syndicated jungle together. We packed arenas to capacity, coast to coast, together. We've kept the Smack Off thriving for nearly a quarter of a century together. We did top the iTunes podcast charts together. Everything we've done here, we've done together, which is why I am going to embrace the fact that you get to vote on the Hall of Fame, because I want us to all go in together, if it's possible, if we're lucky enough. I want it to happen, and I want us to go in together. And there's nobody that I would rather roll with into battle with the clones. Sure, Rome, you love us today. Look, I always love you, but I do have to check you. If I don't check you, who is going to check you? But clones, I know what you're about. And I know when you're right. There is nobody who shows up the way you clones do. You're mobile. You're fierce. You're loyal. And you still have a hell of a lot of juice. I know this. I know this. So let's make sure everybody else also knows this. As I said, voting is going to open up in a few weeks. When it does, I will be the first to let you know, and I will say how you can vote. But I want to start the conversation right now, because when you stay ready, you do not have to get ready. And again, I don't want to be the guy stumping for the votes, but this category is voted on by the people. So again, I'm very humbled and very honored to be nominated once again. Last year, I was led to believe that I came really close before coming up just short. But last year, you clones were not involved. This year, you are. I don't make the rules. I just follow the rules. And the rules say in order to get in, at least this year, you got to be voted in. So clones, do what you do. Then maybe, if everything breaks well, then maybe we all have something to celebrate together. Maybe, if we're lucky. Voting is in a few weeks, and then there is a voting window. And if I'm not mistaken, you're allowed to vote twice. So I will tell you how that is. And in response to the question, okay, Rome, I might do that for you. What do I get? Again, my thanks, my sincere appreciation. So that's what we were talking about earlier when somebody said, how do I vote? That announcement came down earlier this morning, and I really am very, very honored. Clones, cops are stepping up enforcement on motorists who are not wearing their seatbelts. If you've thought to yourself, I'm not going very far, or I'm in a rush, or seatbelts are just too uncomfortable, then know this. You're putting yourself at the risk of injury or death. There is never a good excuse not to buckle up, because it's always dangerous to not wear your seatbelt when you get behind the wheel of a car. You know the saying. Now make it a household rule to live by. Click it or tick it. When you're not wearing your seatbelt, you're risking serious injury or death. It's a fact. Cops are writing tickets, so don't take the risk. Don't play the odds. Again, let me say it so it sticks. Click it or tick it. Deon Buchanan is my guest. Deon, nice to have you back. How are you?
How's it going? What's going on?
What's up? Good to have you back. Let me first ask you about your head coach, Steve Wilks. And I start there because I talked to this guy on the phone a few weeks back, and I'm like a media knob. And this guy had me all fired up, like I want to go to battle. So I got to ask you, what were your early impressions of your new head coach so far?
Oh, man, just like you just said, really just sparks a fire underneath you. I kind of just want you to go out there and play football right now every time he talks. He's an assertive guy, you know. He's just somebody that, honestly, you know, you want to go out there and play for, you know. So when I first met him, when I first talked to him, when I seen him talking, and honestly, he's just inspiring. So I mean, I'm excited for what's to come.
Now, you were drafted in 2014, and you had been one of the younger guys on a very good defense for a while. But now, when you look around, suddenly you were the second longest tenured guy on that defense. So what's that like for you?
Man, I just feel like I kind of just blinked, and next thing you know, 4 years goes by, you know, and. You know, you kind of just don't listen to all the vets. They're going to tell you it's gonna come fast and things like that. And then what do you know, it's here, you know. I don't know, it feels good. You know, I just feel like, you know, the coaches, you know, they expect more from me, and I expect a lot out of myself. So I feel like, you know, say if you expect more out of yourself, you know what I'm saying, all the expectations from other people are going to be lower. So, but I'm excited. You know, I want to be a leader. I want to be a captain. I want to be those things that for the team, you know, and I feel like we got a great, great core of guys, great group of guys, and a lot of people I've been around for a long time, and I know how they play, and they know how I play, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to give them everything I got.
Dayon Buchanan joining us. You know, I want to talk about your role and what the coaches are expecting of you in just 1 minute. But if you go back, I mean, like you said, in a blink of an eye, 4 years went by. But that 2014 draft was not that long ago. What do you remember about being drafted and then showing up at camp and joining a defense that had so many excellent veteran players?
Right. Yeah. When I got drafted, honestly, it was just, of course, the first answer is just dream come true. You know what I mean? Immediately just tears in the eyes, and I'm just thanking God. I'm thanking my family and just the people around me, and it was just really surreal moment, you know, something I won't forget, you know, ever, you know. And it's one thing that, you know what I'm saying, that's the one time it happens, and, you know, so it was one of the things, like I said, I didn't expect it, but it was just, you know, I felt like I was the best, so, you know, I wanted to be drafted as high as possible, but when I got that call from the Cardinals, it was just, you know, like I said, just a dream come true, and, you know, but yeah, so I mean, it was awesome. You know, it was great, and you know, as far as what they expect from me, I'm just gonna go out there. I'm gonna do what I need to do. Yeah.
Well, now you're one of those vets. In fact, Wilkes has given you the responsibility of leading the huddle and essentially being the Luke Kuechly of the defense. So, what has that transition been like for you? And then, how much do you enjoy leading the defense?
Right. I love it. You know, but like you said, with Luke. That's kind of just a blueprint, you know, and that's the best blueprint you can get. You know, what he's done for his team, what he's done for not only his team but the NFL and players like myself. Just being able to look at his film and just kind of just see what he sees and jumping into, you know, some of the positions and some of the situations that he's already been in. You know, it makes it easier. You know, I get to look at the film and how it's supposed to be done. Him and also Thomas Davis. And, you know, those are two Pro Bowl guys, you know, future Hall of Famers. And, you know, so, I mean, like I said, it makes it easier. But I mean, at the same time, you know, they did things at a high level and they prepared at a high level and they did things the right way, you know. And for me to go on and step in and I mean, of course, not for him, but I'm saying for make my own and blaze my own path, I have to be able to put in that work and do the things at a high level as well. You know, it's not just gonna have to wake up on game day and it's not just gonna come naturally like that. It's gonna have to come to work, you know, repetition and film room study and you know, going out there and actually practicing it with my teammates and you know, saying growing together and the camaraderie and things like that and you know, molding us into, you know, the Arizona Cardinals defense. So I'm excited about it, but like I said, it's awesome when you have something to look on. As far as it's almost like a cheat sheet, you know, go back and you look at the film and look at how they did it, and you know, be able to do it in your own way.
And I know you've studied film with both those guys, so you know exactly how they do it and where they've had their success. Dayon Buchanan joining us. Now, to me, one of the more important questions, though, is the question of your position name in this defense as there is a transition from the 3-4 to the 4-3. Being called the money backer is one of the coolest titles in all of football. I got to be honest, man, it's going to kill me to hear you referred to something other than that. Are you then still the money backer?
I am. That's me. I just feel like that's my name. I feel like, you know, the Cardinals kind of incorporated it, you know, for this position. And, you know, so where I'm at on the field, I feel like that's the money backer position. You know, I know it's a different defense, but I feel like the Cardinals are going to be able to incorporate it into this defense as well. I mean, it's no different from being a back. I mean, but just I feel like it's. In this defense especially, you have to have defensive back tools, you know. So I feel like it even fits more so within this defense because sometimes we might be matched up on the slot. Sometimes we might be matched up on the tight end or the running back. So I feel like it's going to be a wide spectrum of opportunities to be able to show off your
athletic
ability.
Yeah, man, I know.
And,
my man, that happens to me every single day. I got you.
I appreciate it. But, yeah, I think it's going to be good.
Now I want to make sure people understand that being the money backer, you see, it just happened to me. It's more than just a name, though. Like, when you came into the league and you made that move to linebacker, you were at the forefront of teams that were really embracing speed at the linebacker position. And now other teams are looking for their own Dayon Buchanan. What's it mean to you to hear that other teams are trying to figure out where they can get a guy like you?
Yeah, it means a lot, but – every time, you know, when I hear people say it, or, you know, they talk about, you know, me or Mike Barron over at the Rams, I really just think about the guys that kind of paved the way for me, like guys like Cam Chancellor, you know, guys like Troy Polamalu, you know, guys that I grew up emulating and watching because, you know, honestly, you know, Cam was in the box a lot of the time, probably 75% of the time, you know, playing that type of same position that I am. I mean, he'll drop back in coverage depending on what covers they're in. But, you know, guys like I said, Cam Chancellor, Troy Polamalu, you know, those are guys that I watched, you know, just all over the field, in the box, being able to hold their own in the box and do what they need to do, set the edge, hammer the ball, spill the ball. You know, like I said, be able to hold their own within that box going against those big linemen. And, you know, that's kind of like what I leaned on when they told me that I was going to make that switch. You know, I started looking at guys like that and being able to just, like I said, emulating them and seeing just what it takes to, you know what I'm saying? Of course, it takes a different mindset to be down there, you know, and they had that mindset. So I definitely, every time they say it, I feel like I owe other players, you know, that's been in there, and, you know, before, you know, it got to be a big thing, you know, I feel like, you know, I owe them, you know, say their names or whatever, they get, you know what I'm saying, the credit too, you know, because that's what really paved the way for me to be able to do it now, you know, so.
And it takes a different mindset to deal with adversity. And you had some last year in the sense that you had off-season ankle surgery, reconstructive surgery, in fact, and you missed all the off-season work camp in the first three games of the year. You said something late in the year that I thought was really interesting. You said, quote, "Sometimes I've got to remember football is what I do. It's not who I am," end quote. It's a pretty profound observation. What led you to that thinking? And then how does that impact the way you approach football and life?
Right. Well, what really led me to that thing, I mean, when I first started, you know, I've always been known for football, you know, since I was 7, you know, I've been exceptionally well, doing a lot, you know, and, you know, so all I know is football throughout my life, and, you know, that's how I made friends, that's how I just, you know, did different things, that's how, you know what I'm saying, grew, have with this kind of status on, quote, unquote, or whatever. And, you know, sometimes you can get wrapped up in that. Sometimes you get wrapped up in that lifestyle. Sometimes you get wrapped up in just all these different things. And you know what I'm saying? My dad and my mom just sat me down. And, you know, and also my coach. And coach, you know, it's Coach Foote, you know, just understanding that football can't let football control your whole life. You know, football can't control how your mood is every day, you know, because sometimes how it was. Sometimes I had that bad day at practice, my whole day's messed up. You know, if I had a good day at practice, then that just puts me in a good mood for the rest of the day, you know, and that kind of hindered, I want to say, my personality at first and kind of just set it back. You know, sometimes you'll be more closed off than usual if something's not going right within the football field. And, you know, like I said, my mom, my dad really set me down and also, like I said, my coach, you know, Coach Larry Foote, he reminded me again, you know, sometimes when I get in that mode, I'd be so stuck on something, you know, I'm passionate about this, you know, and sometimes I get so stuck on it and I won't be able to move on, you know, so I've gotten better, you know, and I'm talking like if it's a problem, but it's not a disease, you know, I promise, but I've gotten better, you know, and that's why I said that, you know, because I've come a long way from that. You know, now it's, like I said, it's, you know, football is just what I do. You know, it's not who I am. I enjoy playing football, but shoot, I'm you know, say I'm a guy. You know, say I'm a dude just like everybody else. I want to be able to go home and, you know what I'm saying, see my family, hang out and have a good time. You know, even if I had a bad day outside, you know, outside what we're doing. If I had a bad day out there, perhaps maybe I missed a call or I didn't set something the right way or I missed a fit. You know, not allowing that to affect my life, you know,
sure.
But at the same time, you know, correcting it, but yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. Some guys never figure that out, and you figured that out at an early age. Deion Buchanan, my guest, Arizona Cardinals money linebacker. They open up the year against Washington on September 9th. Deion, good to have you back on the show. I appreciate you, and it's great to have you back. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me.
You too, man. Have a great day. And while I'm at it, allow me to take a moment to thank the legends, Chris Melvin and Mark Dalton, for making that happen. Thank you, men. Dale, nice job. Great to have you back. The thinking was, at some point, Major League hitters were going to figure out Shohei Ohtani. Well, that point is not in the middle of May because that has not happened. This guy put on another masterclass yesterday against the Minnesota Twins. 6 1/3. Allowed only 3 singles. 1 run. Struck out 11. He was killing guys with his heat and with his off-speed stuff. He was filthy. Disgusting. Nasty. Angels manager Mike Socha loved what he saw. He said Ohtani was, quote, phenomenal. He had both breaking balls working, his slider and his curveball. His splitter was as good as we've seen it, and he got some big outs with his fastball, end quote. Hey, look, Mike Socha does not throw praise around like that very often. But, of course, that's Ohtani's manager. Of course, he's going to say nice things. The Twins probably do not think as much of him, right? Wrong. Twins first baseman Logan Morrison, and I quote, he's only 23 years old and is going to get better. I think he's doing something that nobody has probably ever done, and it might be a long time before you see it again, end quote. I mean, that's some crazy praise right there. Except Logan was only getting warmed up because here comes the real heat. He went on, and I quote, there's another guy in that clubhouse who is a really good player, but to me, with what Ohtani does on the mound and with the bat, he's probably the best player in the world. End quote. I mean, holy crap. Forget for a moment whether or not it's accurate or not. It doesn't even matter. What matters is a major league player just casually threw out, quote, probably the best player in the world, end quote, about somebody who arrived in the majors 2 months ago. I know guys get caught up. I know guys get carried away at times. But when you're comparing Ohtani to Mike Trout, when Mike Trout's compared to Mickey Mantle, and Mike Trout's going to go down as one of the best ever to do it, and you're saying that Ohtani is probably the best player not only in his clubhouse, but in the entire world, 2 months after arriving here, it's pretty insane. Pretty insane, and I love it. I mean, that's an amazing thing for a guy to say about Ohtani. But if Ohtani and Trout aren't the best players in the world, then I know who is. This cat.
Is a player. Oh, Bryce Harper, lift off and gone. Oh, man. Number 13 for Harper. Wow.
Boy, that's as good as it gets right there. 3-0, green light, neon green light with the pink bat. And that is a thing of beauty. Launch angle, exit velo, wow, everything.
MLB, ESPN with that. I mean, I don't even need to see that guy's name or say it. I don't need to say his name because the crack of the bat says everything. Bryce Harper could even change his name to that sound because that's how you recognize him now. I mean, there are plenty of guys who hit home runs, but I don't really know anybody who hits them with that sound. I mean, listen to this very closely.
As a player. Oh, lift off and gone.
I'm not sure what's better. The grunt before the crack or the crack or the right fielder's reaction. Alvin, run that back one more time and listen for the grunt before the crack.
As a player. Harper, lift off and gone.
It's like the grunt, the crack, and then the guttural. Oh,
there's a player. Oh, Harper, lift off and
it's
gone.
Like a symphony. The grunt, the crack, the oh,
there's a player. Oh, Harper, lift off and gone.
And the right fielder who doesn't take his hands off his hips. He just stood there and watched. Didn't even take a step. Just watched it go. Can't blame the guy. Launch angle, 25 degrees. Exit velo, 115 miles per hour. Decibels, 1 billion. Can I hear it one more time?
There's a player. Oh, Bryce Harper, lift off and gone.
Now, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see that pickup truck, that red pickup truck in the stands, in the right field stands. It's way back. It's like, I don't know, maybe 1,500 feet from home plate. They probably put that out there thinking, no one's going to reach this car. No one's going to hit this car. Wrong again. Harper came this close to not only reaching it, but wrecking it. And he's doing that on a nightly basis. Can I have one more for the road, Alvin?
As a player. Oh, Bryce Harper, lift off and gone. Oh, man. Number 13 for Harper. Wow.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that Ohtani is the greatest player in the world. Not when he's not even the best player in his own clubhouse. Not when Mike Trout is in that clubhouse. Not when Bryce Harper is doing that. But I am going to enjoy all three of these cats. I'm going to enjoy the hell out of them. And I do love that somebody like Logan Morrison is saying, hey, this guy might already be the best player in the world. He was dirty yesterday, Ohtani. And then there's Harper doing that. Dear Romy, was that the sound of Bryce Harper crushing that 3-0 heater or a freaking gunshot? How far did he hit that ball? 2 miles. Yeah, I don't know anybody else who hits bombs the way this guy does, and they sound like this.
As a player. Oh, Bryce Harper, lift off and gone.
This dude is so strong. He almost hit that truck. And that truck, you know, I'm being facetious when I say, was that truck 1,500 feet from home plate? But it was like 900 feet, I think. Hit that ball a long, long way. Mark Stein is my guest. Mark, my man, what's going on? How are you?
Mr. Rome, I am well. I had to join you, man. You gave my longtime nemesis, Dell Demps from the Pelicans. You gave him bragging rights over me because you had him on a couple weeks ago. So you're helping me even the score today.
I appreciate you saying it. In a way, he was kind of like my nemesis, too. That guy was tough. They were tough at Pacific. When he balled
I heckled no one more in the Big West than him. No one.
What was it like back then? What else do you remember about the conference back then? And just so people know who he is and what he does, Mark, he was a tough, hard-nosed player, wasn't he?
Well, you know, I mean, we were lucky when we were in school. We're so old. We were lucky because the league was awesome, and every team in the league had at least one NBA player, and Vegas coming to your gym was like an NBA team coming to your gym. So we were pretty spoiled. It was a different time. But, man, I don't know why. Because there were a lot of great players in the conference, but just something about him got under my skin. And he's had a great run this season with the Pelicans. The Pelicans had a great year, and he made some big moves to put that team in position. But I never hesitate to remind him how much I heckled him in college.
I love it. I appreciate it. Mark Stein joining me, and we'll talk Big West ball whenever we can. Listen, in addition to that, there's a lot that I want to cover with you, including your piece in the Times today about Jerry West and his role with the Clippers. But let's start for a moment about Cavs and Celtics. As you pointed out, the non-LeBrons have saved Cleveland at points earlier in the playoffs, but how much tougher is the challenge for them in this series?
I mean, this Boston team, they're the Cinderellas of this postseason. And we all look at them and say, imagine how good they're going to be when they get Hayward and Irving back. But they're not hearing any of that. I mean, they are a problem right now. Brad Stevens is a problem right now. And honestly, I think Horford is their biggest problem. LeBron's going to have to play. LeBron's already been having the best postseason probably of his career individually. He's going to have to play that way the whole series because, I mean, besides Brown and Tatum and all these other guys that Stevens is throwing at them, this Cavs team has no answer for Al Horford. I mean, they just don't have anyone who can guard him. So I think LeBron is going to have to find that level again where he's scoring 40 and going for triple doubles every night. Now he says game one's always a feel out game for him. And you know, his history does show that. I mean, I think he's something like 2-12 in game ones on the road, some crazy stat like that. But I mean, this Cavs team has no margin for error. He really can't wait anymore. I mean, they got to do it in game two right away.
Mark Stein joining us. He covers the NBA for the New York Times. All right, Mark, let me get you to jump over the Western Conference Finals for a minute. They start tonight, Golden State in Houston. What are your early thoughts on that matchup?
I mean, we've all treated that as it's the NBA Finals. And Houston, it probably is the best team that Golden State has faced in this run. They're deeper. I mean, their backcourt is obviously as dynamic as Golden State's, as dynamic as it gets. The question for me is going to be, Houston's going to ask Harden and Paul to do so much, and Golden State with its ball movement, they're going to make those guys move a lot. Do they have enough in the tank at this point in the season to go seven and beat these guys four times if that's what it takes. I mean, that's to me where the series is going to hinge. But, you know, that said, Golden State's bench has been a major disappointment. They don't have the depth that they thought they would coming into the season. So it's really on the Hamptons five. Can, you know, those guys are all going to have to play well. Maybe not every night. You're not going to get all five across the board playing well every night, but Golden State is really turning to its main guys and expecting them to carry it home. But I think long series is the safe bet.
Mark Stein joining us. He covers the NBA for the New York Times. Mark, one more thought about that matchup. Of course, it's Chris Paul's first appearance in the Western Conference Finals after a long, long journey to even get to this point. How important is that to him?
You know, I think he's realistic enough to know that if they lose in this round and if he has a bad series, he's not going to get any love for getting to the conference finals. I mean, this Houston team was built to take the Warriors down, and they're pretty much in a win-it-all-or-bust scenario, just like the Warriors. The good news is we know Houston. If they lose this series or if this series goes badly for them, they're going to keep making moves. They're going to try to get into the LeBron mix this summer. They're not going to stop. It's not like this is that team's only shot. But Chris Paul did just turn 33. So, I mean, he doesn't have an infinite amount of time to you know, get to the finals. All those guys, Harden, Mike, I'm a huge Mike D'Antoni fan. Harden, D'Antoni, Chris Paul. I mean, all of them have big holes in their playoff resumes, and that's, you know, this series is a big referendum for all of them because of that.
Mark Stein joining us. They all do. Every one of those guys do. Now, as I mentioned at the very top, you have a really interesting piece on Jerry West in the New York Times on Monday, and you start with an anecdote from Clippers owner Steve Ballmer and the fact that it was nearly the end of the season before Ballmer and West actually watched a game together. Why was that?
That's not because of Ballmer. That's because of Jerry.
Sure.
Jerry wants to be alone. He wants to be where nobody can hear him so he can just unload, let it fly, use not safe for radio language. And he told Steve Ballmer right away, during games, I don't know that you want to sit with me, but I think Steve Ballmer really enjoys having Jerry West there. It was a massive coup for the Clippers to be able to lure him away from Golden State. And look, you've been in SoCal as long as anyone. You know how, even with the Clippers' success over the last six seasons, just having Jerry there, it gives them a level of credibility that they've never had. And to see him tomorrow night on the lottery dais repping the Clips, I mean, I'm gonna wonder what it's like to be a Laker fan and kind of watch that and watch Jerry repping the Clips logo. That's got to be still a tough one for Lakers fans to take. And look, he's not making the final calls there, but I think having him, Golden State needed the credibility boost when they went after him in 2011, and now he's doing the same thing for the Clippers.
Mark, you're right, though. I mean, him representing the Clippers at the draft lottery is just, it's weird and it's surreal. What does he make of that? I mean, you're right. For the Laker fans, that might be kind of a bitter pill to swallow. What does Jerry West, though, make of that?
Well, it's interesting. I talked to Jerry about it, and Jerry's wife said the same thing as well, that you know, according to Karen West, that Jerry still has a soft spot for all the teams he's been with, and he kind of has a loyalty factor that, you know, look, he told me flat out, if people think I'm rooting against the Lakers, they're crazy. I'm never going to root against the Lakers, and how could he? I mean, he had a 40-year run with them, and there's always going to be a soft spot in his heart for the Lakers, but he is also as crazy competitive. I mean, you put him with Jordan, with Kobe, he is as competitive as any of those guys. And so the competitive streak in him, for sure. I mean, he wants to help the Clippers establish themselves as the team in LA. That realistically we know is never going to happen, but look, the Clippers had a really good season, all things considered. Now they've got all this financial, potentially two lottery picks in this draft. I mean, they've got the pieces to make moves. Are they, you know, if they can go out and trade for a Kawhi Leonard, I mean, that's a pretty big statement, even in Lakerland. So, I think he has a 2-year deal. This is the first year of his deal with the Clippers. Ballmer told me that if Jerry wants to keep going beyond that, he's welcome to stay. I can't see Jerry West retiring. I mean, he needs basketball in his life, and he's still hungry. It's amazing. For everything he's done, he is still really hungry.
Mark Stein joining me. The guy's amazing. I mean, he's about to turn 80 and recently shot 78 and then a 75 at Bel Air. I mean, this guy's shooting below his age. He's crazy competitive. You know he wants to work. He's not looking for any kind of exit ramp or exit strategy at all. Now, you mentioned Kawhi Leonard. What do you think is going to happen with San Antonio? Is there any way they can rebuild that bridge with Kawhi Leonard, or has that been obliterated?
You know, I thought all along that Pop and Kawhi would sit down like Pop did with LaMarcus Aldridge after last season. And if you get Pop and Kawhi at a dinner table, there's no way this thing doesn't get smoothed over. But now, this season was so acrimonious behind the scenes, I'm really struggling to picture it now. I don't know if it can be fixed. I mean, really only Pop knows if he wants to fix it. I mean, that's, I think, question number one. Do the Spurs want to put nearly $220 million on the table after the way this whole season went down? And I think they're going to trade him. Again, no one can really get inside Pop's head. No team guards its thinking closer than the Spurs, but it's just really hard for me to believe at this point that the fences can be mended.
You know, to that point, Mark, you're right. Nobody can get inside Pop's head, and nobody guards that information more carefully than the Spurs. So it's so weird and almost impossible to figure out exactly what happened. Can you even speculate? How did these two sides, how did it go so wrong for these two when this guy was the next Tim Duncan? This guy was the next face of the franchise. How did this go south as badly and as quickly as it did?
And you know what? I think that's partially our fault on the outside, is that we all wanted to paint Kawhi as the next Tim Duncan. Oh, he's perfect. He doesn't like the media. He doesn't talk. He's Tim Duncan 2.0. No, you can't expect anyone to be a replica of Tim Duncan. And I think that was kind of our fault in the media. I think really what's happening here is Tim Duncan. This is my 25th season covering the league. More than any other superstar I've ever covered, Tim Duncan is 1,000,000,000% organization first, and he gave Pop all the latitude to make all the rules, and everyone in San Antonio had to fall into line. LaMarcus Aldridge and Kawhi Leonard are modern superstars. They want a lot of say in what goes on. And there is nothing wrong with that. This is the modern NBA. This is the age of player power. We saw it last season. Chris Paul forced his way to Houston. Paul George forced his way to Oklahoma City. No one in this league flexes their power more than LeBron James. And Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, they want to say in what happens. And I think it's really hard for the Spurs to come to grips with that because they haven't had to deal with it for two decades. And now they find themselves in the same position as pretty much every NBA team. And so I think it's an adjustment on both sides. Kawhi is so good when he's healthy. I think they have to try to fix it if they can, because he is not going to be easy to replace at all. But I don't know. I just wonder if too much has happened for this thing to be repaired.
Mark Stein, my guest. Mark, one last thought before I let you go, and it goes back to your piece on Jerry West. You know, if we go back to Jerry West's time with Golden State, he was one of the people who was against trading Klay Thompson for Kevin Love, and that was before Klay was the Klay that we know right now. Now, at the Clippers, though, this year, he was not opposed to trading Blake Griffin, even though that meant dealing a star that they had just re-signed. In your opinion, why was that?
Well, he flat out said, and I think he realized that they were stuck. I mean, when they lost Chris Paul, keeping Blake was going to keep them respectable, theoretically was going to keep them in the playoff mix, but they had no flexibility to do anything. So I think we've seen this in Jerry's history. He's willing to make the unpopular move, and maybe even bigger than the whole Klay thing, at least earlier in his Golden State tenure. You know, he was the one urging Joe Lacob, we've got to trade Monte Ellis. Don't pay attention to how popular he is. Don't pay attention to all the heat you're going to get from this. We've got to break up the Curry Ellis backcourt. We've got to get Andrew Bogut in here. And that move was maybe not as big, but certainly crucial in the whole Warriors evolution, because, you know, it paved the way for a Curry Thompson backcourt, got Bogut in there as a defensive anchor, and things really kind of picked up after that. So Jerry's never afraid to make that move or advocate it. And again, he's not the one making the final decisions there. He didn't trade Blake Griffin. It's obviously an organizational decision. But Steve Ballmer did tell me that Jerry was very clear. Do it. We have to do this. You can't worry about the criticism we're going to take. And look, the Clippers did take criticism. You give Blake Griffin $170 million and turn around and trade him 6 months later, everyone around the league is going to say you're heartless. And the Clippers have to own that and wear that. But Jerry West told him, don't worry about that. For our long-term future, we have to do this.
He covers the NBA for the New York Times and does so expertly. The pride of Cal State Fullerton, Big West forever, Mark Stein. Mark, it is so good to get caught up with you. As I mentioned, it had been a minute or two, but really nice to have you back on the show. Let's make sure we don't wait so long next time.
I'm here anytime, man. Thanks for reaching out.
To Albuquerque, Rex in the ABQ. Hey, Rex, what's going on? How are you?
Great, Jimmy. I know who I don't want to be, and that's Tyler in Edmonton. I'm not sure how he found the time to make that call, because I'm pretty sure this is the time of the day where he goes in for his low tee shot and his checks waxes with Matt and Van. But anyway, Taunt Nation, you thought Tiger was back? Get. First, there's no way old dominant Tiger misses one, rinses one on 17 while in contention. It just never happened. He's lost his edge, too. To play good, you've got to look good. And I'm seeing some disturbing bald spots developing on Eldrick's dome. Now, I don't know what type of hair system Tiger is using, and frankly, I don't want to know. What I do know is it's time to sprinkle some more chia seeds up in there and just add water, and he'll be ready to go by the U.S. Open. I'm out.
So what do I do with that guy? Thanks, Rex. Thanks for nothing. Tyler in Edmonton. Tyler, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, how was your weekend, buddy?
Good, good. Tyler, how about you?
It's good, man. Everything's good up here. Real quick, I want to shout out to Alvy, the Hall of Fame clip from the Cat yesterday, talking about how good he played. An all-timer, man. You got to check it out. Romy, I know you probably don't want to hear it today, but Tiger looks great, his swing feels great, and I like his chances. You know, dude, it wasn't that long ago when all the fat asses with a pulse and a mic were writing off the Caps and they were down 2-0 to the Blue Jackets. The same lava spewers that wrote them off when Pittsburgh rolled into town, or the same guys that wrote them off when Wilson got suspended, or how about when Backstrom busted his hand? And ironically, it's the same people from a year ago who were claiming that the Capitals were no longer Obi's team, but Backstrom's team. Crosby, honk, hot take idiots at their finest. The Caps are finally getting over some adversity, and it's because Ovechkin's supporting cast is finally pulling their weight. And as a result, I think if the Capitals win game three, it's probably going to be done 4 or 5. If the Lightning win game three, I could see it going 6 or 7. And lastly, to some people who aren't pulling their weight, besides our guy Rick, the golden ticket department has been a little shy as of late. What's the matter, guys? You scared of the choppa? Caleb even put one on a tee for you guys when he came in and called you out. He's the easiest guy to fire back on. Make some jokes about Diet Coke and you're good. You guys need to lighten up. So if you need to, feel free to come in and make fun of me for my flannel, maple syrup, or my near-perfect physique. And I'm sure Rome will give you a pass. Give the people what they want. Bring out the choppa. Thanks again, Romy. I'm out.
You got a tie. Tyler in Edmonton, rack him. I'd give him a golden ticket, but he's already got one.
Good night now!